lighting the way with positive energy and love. HRNradio.com.
Hi, welcome to the Randy McGeed Show, where our transformative stories cause a ripple effect of light and love to embrace your soul. I'm Randy McGeed. I am a vibrational shaman, international breathwork facilitator, and author of Beverly Hills Concentration Camp, A Healing Journey and Memoir. Today, my special guest is, I want to say my very special guest, is Patrick Planeta. Patrick has over a decade of professional experience in interior design and fine art brokerage. His work spans corporate, residential, retail, and hospitality in Boston, Massachusetts. After gaining public recognition for his extraordinary talent while working at one of Boston's premier design firms, Patrick began Planeta Design Group. Patrick is deeply committed to client service, catering to each client's unique situation and needs. He brings innovative design solutions that implement the client's vision and desires. In 2010, Patrick was among the first group of inductees to receive New England's Homes 5 Under 40 Award, recognized as the hottest emerging talent in residential design in New England. He serves on the board of directors of Artists for Humanity in South Boston and has been part of the team building the new Creative Industries Epicenter on a land donated by Procter & Gamble. Patrick also volunteers his time to various charities and art-related philanthropic engagements. So, Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It was really interesting, you know, when I met you, you were such a happy, big, wonderful presence, and I just felt like so much love exudes from you. I mean, in general, just with everything you do, and I'm so happy you're here because you really are the epitome of the kind of person that I want on this show, that, you know, somebody who really makes a difference in the world on many levels. So I really, again, want to thank you for being here.
Of course, it was a pleasure meeting you too. It was an instant connection when you were here in Boston.
So, yeah, I understand that, you know, you've done so many projects. You know, I read some of your articles that were written about you in Boston Magazine and other places. And I wonder, you know, where you got, you know, I always see this spark in people, and yours just, you know, you were sparking off. You were like sparking everywhere. So I just was wondering what, you know, what is that spark in you? Where did that come from?
I think overall just growing up, I grew up in Connecticut, and it was kind of an interesting time when my parents had my father's family come live with us, my grandparents, his parents, and I grew up with them and then my grandmother and grandfather, and I think just having that kind of strong family situation around, and then also my grandfather who passed away at 100 years old, he was my best friend growing up, and you know, it's money can't buy wisdom, and it was just a wonderful many, many years of spending time with him and my grandmother, who was a fine arts painter, an educator. My grandfather was an inspiration, whose parents both passed away at a very young age, and he raised his brothers and sisters and ended up owning a very successful machining company, self-taught, very smart man. And I think just being surrounded by that constant energy to thrive is in my blood or in my DNA, and was always constantly engaged in as a child and then growing up.
Do you remember some of his wisdoms that you could pass on to us?
Yeah. You know, he said, life's a journey, and he's not going to know everything, even when he passes away. So I think it's just always educating yourself and being aware and, you know, never stop learning, never stop giving. Just know that, as they say, life is a journey. But in the end, he was comfortable knowing that he did what he could while he was here and that he can't do everything.
Was he as generous as you are? Was he a charitable man? Was he, and your grandmother, were they that way too?
Yeah, my family in general grew up very charitable. It was always, you know, a third, a third, and a third. Spend a third, save a third, and give a third.
Mm-hmm.
And just, it's been raised kind of in also in my blood, and something I adopted at a pretty young age.
Mm-hmm. And so how did you get into design? What, you know, I know you have, it was probably a series of steps that got you there. And I think I read somewhere that you wanted to be a veterinarian?
So it's actually funny. I have a love for animals and an affinity for them. I actually sit on the board here at the MSPCA, which is a national renowned hospital for veterinarian care here in Boston. And I just quickly found out that my love of animals did not translate. I come from a big medical family. Mm-hmm. It did not translate into the more intimate surgery side of things. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely a big teddy bear and full of love. And I'll happily take care of you after surgery, but I do not want to perform it.
Right.
So I applied to that and then architecture and design school. Got into both and then had to make a decision. And I think just growing up in my grandmother's artistic ability, always fostering that, my parents fostering that, it was just kind of after, viewing so many colleges and universities when I came to Boston, I still remember my mother looking at me and saying, "You're home, aren't you?" And I was like, yeah, there was just like an instant, I think I looked at 10 schools, mm-hmm. and it was just instantly like, yep, this is where I need to be.
That's great. That's great that they honed you like that, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's important. I also always listen to myself. If you quiet everything, you can sometimes, it's very easy to find your own answers or listen to your heart.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so did you have role models in design? I mean, I know you had your family, which is amazing, but did you have any designers that you really liked or that were your models or mentors?
Not really. I was always interested. I always find it, I always tell my staff now, just be interested in everything. Get outside your comfort zone. You should read, men's magazines, women's magazines, design magazines, car books, whatever it is, just to stimulate your mind. And creativity comes from all different arenas of life. Just that constant thirst for knowledge and education.
Mm-hmm. So what's your process, like when you see a new customer, do you, what happens in your head? Like, what do you look for?
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's taught me a lot of patience in life. Usually we get a new client, and I have this ability to see how the space at the end of the day should look or could look. And I think what is amazing about our work is that, you're meeting somebody who, say, we're doing their hedge fund or their home, and they have a completely different career path. You take it for granted that you can see design and create so easily and clearly. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good lesson in patience and listening, where you kind of tailor back and help them understand the process. It's a lot of money. It's a huge expense. There's a lot of worry and anxiety in it from the client side.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think slowing down, teaching them the process and how things unroll or unveil, and then also being their advocate.
Do you have the situation where, the wife is just really excited and the husband's freaking out because he knows how much money he's about to spend?
Yeah, right. Or the other way around.
Or the other way around?
Yeah.
Right.
No, it's actually interesting. We just had a client recently who we're moving in now, and they were both really excited. They really trusted the process, the team that we assembled with ourselves and the contractors and the project. And it was actually interesting. The husband was so busy traveling. The wife just started coming to the meetings, and then he finally said at one meeting, "I'm not coming anymore until it's all done." And the last, the architecture's done, the building's done, the furniture's in, the art's on the wall.
Wow.
And right now we're installing it, actually, and he's coming tomorrow, Saturday.
Oh, how exciting.
It'll either be a great weekend or a bad weekend.
I'm sure it's going to be great. Are you going to take a photo of his expression?
Yeah, right. I wish I was there when he walked in. And we're really proud of it. The wife is really proud of it. And I think, again, it's just balancing, money can be the sky's the limit. And then there's other times, you just learn budgets and where you should spend and not spend, and help educate them just from, being sensible about your investment.
Mm-hmm. When I lived in Israel for 8 years, and we bought an old house and tore it down, basically, except for one wall, and rebuilt it. And so I was the amateur designer. I knew exactly what I wanted. And then, as it was being built, I noticed that things sometimes did not come out the way I thought they would. And
yeah.
And I realized, pretty soon that some people, no one knows, because they look at it, they're like, "Oh, that's great. How did you think of that?" And so I sometimes the mistakes or you don't think is, when it looks different than you think it's going to look, it actually works out great. I just wonder if you have that kind of situation sometimes.
Yeah, we always laugh in the office because no matter how many renderings you show someone or sketches or point it out or show them the materials or drawings, it's a lot of faith in us to, you know, pull the project together. Mm-hmm. And you think they're hearing and seeing and following along. And then we always laugh in the end when we're going through a project that's finished and the client's like, oh, wow, look at that. That's awesome. I didn't realize that's how it was going to look. and you're kind of like, you know, thankful that's the reaction.
Right.
But, yeah, it's definitely something to be aware about. And, you know, there's so many choices out there. I tell clients constantly, you know, be it commercial design, residential, they oftentimes look, you know, what's in a magazine, what their friends have, and they keep, you know, it's hard to make up their mind on something. And, you know, it's like that book, The Paradox of Choice. There's so many choices out there that at some time you have to kind of make a decision, put the pencils down, know there will always be another 10,000 choices tomorrow, which is, you know, invigorating about my career that there's so many talented individuals out there that come out with new products and things that we can use in the building industry. But, you know, it's limitless. So having the confidence or working with a professional that can help you make those decisions. So in the end, you're not, you know, wishing you hadn't made that choice.
Right. Wow. So, yeah, there's a lot of, I'm sure that you play the role of a psychologist a lot, you know.
I also practice Reiki, and then Lumerian energy work and acutonics.
Mm-hmm.
And so just that kind of work that I do at a volunteer level, it also helps me for my own calmness and then also with clients to.
Do you sit them down and say, let me give you a Reiki session?
Yeah, I should. No, and sometimes it's just understanding people's energy. Mm-hmm. You become very good at, you know, when a meeting's too long or, you know, you can kind of tell they're at their end of their rope, either with each other or in a board meeting when they're trying to decide things on, say, a law firm design, you know, negotiating through that or the power of compromise between two different clients who have way different tastes but are fighting with each other in front of you, how you start to insulate and deflect some of that energy.
Mm-hmm. What do you do in that kind of a situation?
I kind of step back and I think in life people get so in depth on their, what they have to say and what the direction is. And sometimes when you're standing on the other side of the table and listening to argument, it's kind of just slowing them down and like taking each piece instead of, you know, the drastic dump on the table of emotion and reaction and just kind of helping them both hear one another and then coming to a compromise. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always work. Sometimes one is more, I wouldn't say powerful, but definitely opinionated or wins out.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as I can leave that conversation in a better place or moving a project forward, it's great. And when it doesn't work, you know, it has a sensitivity to me.
So it's like mediation.
Yeah, exactly. My next career, I'll be an attorney.
So, you know, I was thinking about, you know, other design students, like, do you have any recommendations, if any are listening, and ones that I'm sure see you as a role model, what would you tell them, you know, about what you're doing and, you know, going to school or any advice, any motto, anything you'd like to say?
Yeah, what I tell new employees of mine that are fresh out of school, even some seasoned veterans, I think just listen. I think so many people go into the field thinking it's your vision that you're creating for everyone. And at the end of the day, it's really not our vision. It's the client's vision. Mm-hmm. And I always use in my work a way of like working for them to achieve what they set out to do. And at certain times, I think it's healthy for me to push them or challenge them in a decision a little bit so it can be the best it can be.
Mm-hmm.
But really, at the end of the day, the client is the one directing the creative bus forward. And just to really listen to your clients, record keeping, you know, explore as much as you can, travel, work hard, stay focused, and you can be successful.
Mm-hmm. And how do you feel you're giving back to Boston? I feel like Boston gives a lot to you. You give back in terms of design, but I know that you do a lot of other things.
Yeah, so essentially, I'm very philanthropic here in Boston. So I sit on a couple boards, the MSPCA, which is the Animal Rights and Veterinary Hospital, United South End Settlements, which is a settlement house for, you know, people living below the poverty line in the area, Artists for Humanities, which is a great place where teenagers come and create art and are paid for their services. And so for me, my work has always been helping those without a voice, be it an animal or a person, and helping them, you know, have a voice, be respected, somebody honoring them, helping them along, and truly is my passion.
That's so beautiful. I love that. Yeah, it gives me chills.
That's my true, right now too, I'm involved in Nikki's Law, which is helping adults that are abused by the system. So there's a lot of, you know, handicapped adults, children that have different emotional things happening with them. And there's no registry in Massachusetts and other states that prevents workers abusing these individuals and then going on to another facility and doing the same thing, because a lot of the clientele, you know, they can't express themselves. So trying to bring these people to justice is very difficult. So right now we passed it in the Senate. It's going to go to the House, and then hopefully from there it'll be passed in Massachusetts, and then we'll work nationally to get this registry up and running.
That's so important. That's amazing. I would like to get involved in that too. That sounds super important.
Yeah, it's great. And again, it's people without a voice, or
right,
parents that feel hopeless in the situation. And for me, it's just not okay.
Right. And so, people without a voice. I mean, when did you decide that your role was bigger than you thought it was? Because it is. You have this beautiful role, and I just, you know, when did you know? When did you decide?
Yeah, I think what happened to me is just, you know, growing up as a gay man, and then from sixth grade to high school, it was just constantly being picked on or bullied, the classic story. And it was very interesting when I came to Boston and came here to college and started to meet a bigger picture of people and really be accepted for the first time of who I was. And then slowly gaining traction in my business and in the industry, and then just getting that kind of, it's almost like getting known for something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're good at your profession, but then it also starts to trickle into other areas because people, you know, they know who you are, and then you get involved in things. And then before you do, you almost flip the wheel, and it's like my doing well in design has actually helped me to help people. And now I can take what recognition I have and turn the table and use my recognition to, you know, empower these other organizations. Philanthropically, also on the ground, mission-based. And it just made me realize, like, when I look back at the past, you don't forget that memory.
Right.
It's an educational learning moment, but it's time to move on, and now you do have a voice, and you can help people. And that's just how I choose to combat that kind of area of my life that wasn't so wonderful every day.
And I think maybe you'll agree that, maybe you'll agree that the past might have happened so that you could learn something, so that you could take it to help people, right?
Yeah, I'm a huge believer in, you know, sometimes it's, what's the old saying, you go through it, and my mother used to always say the universe won't give you anything bigger than you can't handle.
Right.
And she was a huge, huge, huge supporter of mine, and I count my blessings every day for my family and her especially, who just guided me through those rocky times.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe what you just said, you know, it's nothing I couldn't handle, and it's something I survived through, and now I can use that power to empower others.
Right. Well, we're going to take a short break right now. We'll be right back with Patrick Planeta, Boston designer from Planeta Design Group. His website is planetadesigngroup.com. We'll be right back.
Supercharge your chakras. Randy McGee's Shamanic Healing Techniques uses spiritual energy that charges your chakras with light. Randy McGee will get to the root of your problem and help you get rid of negative thought forms and more, all to help you heal. So, if you want relief and a sea of calmness in your life, Call Randy McGee now at 424-265-3109 or visit randymcgee.com. That's Randy with an I, M-A-G-G-I-D.com.
Breathe in, breathe out. It's easy to use breathwork to alleviate pain or reduce anxiety and depression. Sounds easy, but for it to work, you may need someone to show you how, and that's where Randy McGee comes in. She helps you unlock emotional blocks in the body, get closer to your authentic self, or even increase your connection to spirit, all while you heal with Randy McGee's breathwork healing. So breathe in and breathe out as you go for the phone to call Randy right now at 424-265-3109. That's 424-265-3109.
The award-winning book by Randy McGee, Beverly Hills Concentration Camp, is both an inspirational healing journey and a memoir. It focuses on a new way of thinking that brings love and healing into the world while providing a voice for the generation after the Holocaust survivors. Beverly Hills Concentration Camp is a hard story with a happy ending. It's been known to help people heal. Get your own copy of Beverly Hills Concentration Camp by Randy McGee at BarnesandNoble.com or Amazon.com.
House clearing is kind of like house cleaning for the spiritual energy in your home, and Randy McGee does house clearings and house blessings. Make the energy in your home filled with positive, successful vibes. Bring in fresh energy, and if you're selling your home, it may even help attract potential buyers. Get Randy McGee's house clearing and blessings for your home. Makes a great gift, too. Call Randy McGee now at 424-265-3109 or visit randymcgee.com. That's Randy with an I, M-A-G-G-I-D.com.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back. This is the Randy McGee Show, where our transformative stories cause a ripple effect of light and love to embrace your soul. I am a vibrational shaman, international breathwork facilitator, and author of Beverly Hills Concentration Camp, A Healing Journey and Memoir. If you have questions or comments about the show, please connect with me on my website at www.randymcgee.com. Our guest today is Patrick Planetta. He is the owner of Planetta Design Group in Boston, Massachusetts. You can reach out to him on his website at www.planettadesigngroup.com. Hi, Patrick.
Hey.
We've been talking about Patrick's background and his philanthropic interests. And now I want to talk about style. I mean, you're considered Mr. Style in Boston. They're like setting the stage for a lot of things. I saw a lot of pictures of you where you look amazing. And so I just want to know, you know, where do you shop? And where do you go to eat? And what parties are you going to?
All the good stuff. Boston right now is in like a huge boom of building and restaurants opening and new parts expanding, so it's really interesting to be part of. Basically I spend a lot of time in New York City. I spend a lot of time here in Boston, a lot of time in France in the summer. So those are kind of my, and upstate New York actually too, those mm-hmm. are kind of my go-to areas that I get inspired and have a real connection with.
I ran into you at when I was with my daughter, we ran into you at an Italian restaurant. That was a nice, nice moment. It was a really good restaurant. Yeah. So when you go to a lot of parties too for all the, you know, you're on a lot of boards and you.
Charities.
You're also an art curator, right?
Yeah. So we have a whole division of our business that is basically help corporations, private individuals, you know, condominiums, multi-res, collect and curate art. Mm-hmm. So years ago, I used to do fine art. I would leave during high school. I would go to art college in Connecticut, Lyme Academy of Fine Arts, which is run by the Florence Griswold Museum, which is a famous museum in Old Lyme, Connecticut. And so I've always had that love for art in my grandmother, and it was always kind of an idea to foster and honor artists. So we try to help clients either show them works, or a lot of times we'll take clients directly to the studios of artists, where they can meet the artist. And I find it a neat kind of, not scientific experiment, but, you know, you have the artist who is very absorbed into their work and life with the art, and you may have a person who doesn't quite know how to react to art. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of, we act as a liaison between the artist and the client and kind of connect them. And it's really interesting, like, sometimes when you take business people into an artist studio, you know, they're in their suits and ties and business attire, and they meet this you know, off-the-wall artists creating amazing things. And I don't think those two worlds collide that often.
So you're creating alchemy.
Yeah, so I always find it really interesting over time, like people, the business side of people starts to taper down and their emotional side comes out. And it's a really fun thing to see somebody all of a sudden understanding this contemporary work, or the artist now can relate to someone who's not all business but can come down on that emotional level.
Mm-hmm.
It happens time and time again, and it's just a wonderful thing to see.
So that is wonderful, and I know that there's also got to be a flip side to it. You know, like what I mean is, you know, going to a lot of events all the time and being so busy, does it take a toll on you? And how do you handle it?
Yeah, I mean, oftentimes, you know, between all the different meetings and clients, and it's a lot of time and energy and marketing, there's definitely that time that you just need to disconnect. And for me, it's in upstate New York I love to go, or I have two wonderful dogs and a partner, and just escaping out into the woods for 3 hours on a Saturday hike kind of grounds me again.
Beautiful. That's nice. So it's pretty close to
the couch and the TV.
So you're Italian, right?
Yeah, so my mother's Italian and my dad is French, German, and Czech.
Ah, so what do they cook for you? I'm always interested in food.
my parents are great cooks. Grew up cooking, so you know, and everything from Italian dishes to Czechoslovakian dishes to just normal American food. But again, the love. I grew up in a household where, you know, it wasn't McDonald's. It was every night we sat down at a table, had dinner with one another, home cooked food. And you know, I noticed that even in my own life now, there's so many events and things. When we do get to cook at home, it's actually a ritual, or it feels really good. And I think that's from my childhood, remembering what food meant to me.
Mm-hmm. You know, yesterday, as a matter of fact, in the morning I woke up and I thought, I'm going to make French toast. You know, because I've been really busy and everybody's been getting their own breakfast. So I cooked French toast. And then last night, I just put everything aside. I thought, I'm going to be able to handle all my work. But I'm going to make lasagna. I'm going to make their favorite. And, you know, I made it with love. I took my time. I enjoyed it. They enjoyed it. And, you know, we ended up talking for hours afterwards. Nobody was stressed out. And it was really nice. And before I went to bed, my son came over and gave me this huge hug. And he said, thank you for making French toast and lasagna today. So I know he felt the love in the food. You know, it's like that movie Water for Chocolate, you know, where your emotions go into the food. So I totally agree with that. That whole, you know, you can't be stressed when you cook. You need to really feel love when you're cooking. So.
Yeah, it's very therapeutic. Like cooking and gardening. Even when I'm in my garden, it's, you know, weeding. I just love, like, it's just so, you know, you're pulling, you're tending, you're chopping, you're fixing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really enjoyable.
Yeah, I think I need to go weed. So are you a good cook personally, or do you do it a lot yourself?
You know, I love to do it, and I'd say I probably don't do it as much as I should. But when I have the time, I'm like you, something will come into my mind, and then I'll make it very special and make an event out of it.
Mm-hmm. So did you have brothers or sisters or anything like that when you were growing up?
Yes, I have one older brother. He's 2 years older than me. He actually went into physical therapy, and then when he started seeing, I forgot, the shooting at a school, it might have even been Columbine so long ago,
mm-hmm.
He actually left his career and went back to become a teacher, and now he's a teacher helping kids.
Wow.
It really affected him, and he's just on this path of making sure, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth graders are well on their way into their life.
That's amazing. Beautiful story. So we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back to discuss some different types of shamanic ideas regarding interior design and talk more about Patrick Planetta and some of the projects he's working on. So, Patrick, I hope you can stay with us a little longer. It's going to be an enlightening conversation.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Welcome back to the Randy McGeed Show, where our transformative stories cause a ripple effect of light and love to embrace your soul. I'm Randy McGeed. I am a vibrational shaman, international breathwork facilitator, and author of Beverly Hills Concentration Camp, A Healing Journey and Memoir. Our guest today is Patrick Planeta, who is the principal of Planeta Design Group. You can reach him at www.planetadesigngroup.com. Patrick and I have been discussing Boston and style and family and cooking and all sorts of stuff. If you just tuned in and you missed some of the show, you can find us on demand at healthylife.net. So we're going to continue, and I was wondering about your projects. You've had so many. I've seen so many beautiful pictures, and I wonder, of all those projects, what's your favorite?
Yeah, we do work all over. I've done projects as far as China, Curacao. We're doing a bunch of work right now in Texas and Florida and Boston and beyond. But yeah, I think my favorite project is was one of the top 100 contemporary art collectors in the U.S. And we've done two of his homes, and just an amazing older couple that loves talent and design and art. And I sit on the advisory board here at the ICA, which is our Institute of Contemporary Art, and he also is a big donor there. And just having that connection and his home, just being able to be part of all these amazing artists that he collects and creating a space for them, you know, it's very gratifying. And, you know, just to be immersed in all that so closely, be it from the curation to the lighting to the architecture and furniture, and just creating his kind of bliss with his wife of what home is to them. And it's very museum-like.
Do you ever film that? I was, when you were talking, I felt like I was watching a movie, you know?
A movie. Yeah, no, I've never filmed the place. A lot of our clients do, you know, they're very private.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to show all of our work. So it is exciting for me also to be able to get into places or projects that I would, you know, not everyone else could see. It makes me feel very thankful and blessed that people put their trust in me to create their environments.
And all over the world. I didn't realize you go all over the world.
Yes. I did a project on your coast, in Portland, Oregon. And we're actually working with a developer right now in Portland, Oregon. Here in Boston, doing a big development in the Fenway.
Mm-hmm. So I was researching a little bit about shamanism and interior design. I just, you know, I have my own look that is me at home. And I just, you know, was reading a little bit about it, and I found this one article in a magazine, Harper's Bazaar. And it was a designer, and it was an article from the Spiritual Interior Designer, and it was from, let's see, it was called Sacred Spaces, and the designer had traveled, and he decided that he was, you know, things that he had said seemed to be very shamanic, that he heard from a bunch of people, and so this is just one of his quotes. He said, "I became aware that we are all composed of energy and that we oscillate to the vibration of other people." He explains, "In this way, we impact the people around us. We have the capability to alter people's energy. So why couldn't I create spaces which have the same impact? Spaces affect us, and we affect a space. I wanted to create a space that can shape us." When he traveled around the world to visit temples, he learned the ancient sacred structures present in all civilizations, and that they all had the same principles. The way they oriented toward the sun or toward the compass, often they're actually built on so-called energy power points, which are scientifically proven magnetic points on the planet's surface. Their architecture makes use of sacred geometry, the golden ratio alignment, and the knowledge of spiritual energy. We can use the same principles today to restore balance in our daily lives. So, and then he goes into different steps he takes with, dowsing rods and pendulums and energy fields, and he studies the polarity. So I just wonder what you thought about that, or did you ever do anything like that? Do you agree with that? Do you use that in your work, that kind of a thing?
Yeah, we actually have, so I do use some of that in my work. And I think it came from two projects. We did one estate, where the owner was very spiritual, and she had a feng shui master come from New York City to work with us, who taught me, Pun Yun is her name, and taught me a ton of things, and would do cleansings and balance and review what we were specifying and shapes and, you know, just looking at everything from a wholehearted aspect. And we're also doing a development right now, actually, here in Boston, where the clientele is largely from, you know, a spiritual background. I wouldn't say they're all, you know, Chinese feng shui, but a big Asian population. And we actually have a feng shui consultant on that project. And we're burying, you know, grounding stones in the earth, using mirrors for reflection on the building. And I just find it fascinating working with these consultants, looking at people's beliefs and ideas surrounding this.
Right. Do you ever do that at your house with the mirrors and the stones?
Yeah, we actually are at our house. We live on a fairly busy street, and it's on a curve, which is directing energy in a very strong way into the house. And so I actually put a very large curved stone on the corner of the driveway as a lamppost. They thought I was nuts doing it, but I bought a giant antique curbstone and had it installed to kind of deflect energy.
Wow. So I noticed that, well, you know, I'm a shaman, so I actually clear houses, but it's a lot more than saging for me, because I can actually, feel, you know, spirits in the house and talk to them and things like that. So I know that it's a lot more than just sage, you know, mostly. And I noticed when I was, researching that, there's a lot of people that study feng shui and mix it with their shamanic skills in house clearing so that they cover all the bases. So
I think also too, just, you know, looking at things, you know, rounded form shapes, mostly they're more pleasing to look at, or having, you know, a chandelier with several pointy type objects on it aiming down at you in your bed or over your dining table. It's probably not the best idea.
Right.
It just creates like a very pointed tension. So there's even simple things you can do just to move energy or have good feelings around it.
And you use crystals, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Great. I always have that rose quartz by my door, so... We're going to take a short break, though, right now, and return with an excerpt from my book about the design of the house I grew up in. It's really, well, I'll explain after the break. Patrick, I hope you can listen in and comment if it resonates with you.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Randy McGee Show, where our transformative stories cause a ripple effect of light and love to embrace your soul. I'm Randy McGee, a vibrational shaman, breathwork healer, and author of Beverly Hills Concentration Camp. My guest today is Patrick Ponetta. If you want to hear more about how Patrick has changed lives one interior at a time for the betterment of the community in Boston and all over the world, please go to his website at www.planettadesigngroup.com. So my last name means storyteller. And back in the day, the McGee was the storyteller of the village. And so I always like to read a little bit about my book, from my book, that has to do, I think, on some level with the person I'm talking to or what he does. For many years, you know, as I, after I was married in my older years, I could not remember what happened in my childhood. I just couldn't remember things until I started doing breath work. So this, what I'm going to read to you is something I remembered while I was doing breath work. And so I just wanted to read it to you. And it, there's a lot of, I just hope that I described the interior well. So here we go. The morning after, I remembered Lola's party. I awoke wearing my usual badge of pain on my coccyx once again, energy moving from the left side of my sacrum up my spine to my neck. Dizzy and out of sorts, I went to meditate. Please, God, what's going on with me? Stiff and on the verge of tears, I continued the breath work. A swinging door emerged before everything went black. The camera shutter in my mind closing once more. When it opened a few seconds later, I returned to the room full of flowers. In the kitchen, on the morning of the Shiva, as though a magnifying glass was highlighting the details, I saw an alcove of weathered red brick surrounding the white General Electric stove. The kitchen floor was a mosaic of small white pentagons. The breakfast room was filled with sunlight beaming in through the screen and what seemed like gold dust flickering in the air. In the dining room, I noticed lifelike plastic fruits, golden statues, European paintings, and sheer window curtains. Pristine white linen tablecloths were laid on the dining table and credenza. In the den, I marveled at the cherry wood walls and shelves filled with books. Staring at the rust-colored couch, I remembered times I had slept there. Long bronze doorbell chimes accented the front door. Fixating on them, my mind blurred as the four in the middle were broken off, and the cherry wood door was now smashed and hanging off one hinge, with large splinters sticking out. Echoes of Alan's raspy voice screaming in German at the top of his lungs was the gruesome reliving my nightmares were made of. I hid in the dark corners of the house, scared to death like a Jew in World War II Poland, hiding from the enemy. My mother recreated that concentration camp atmosphere in our home. Of course, my reality was not literally as horrid as a real thing. My home life was a mere echo of the past, with no concern for my best interests and controlled by an abusive figure who victimized me as if it were normal, as if my life were of no consequence. It would be 5 more years before I reached out to my mother for help, begging to be sent away to boarding school or to live with another family. I watched my mother, a prisoner in her own world, remain silent and stiff-lipped as I suffered. I walked through the dining room to the breakfast room, noticed a small hallway, and remembered that it was the hallway to the bedrooms. I continued through, recognizing my mother's cedar closet, the smell of mothballs, and the fur coats that my father had bought her. Across from the closet was a staircase leading down to the basement where my older brother, Billy, stored his things. Down the hall was a decorative wood desk, a drawer with a crystal knob, and a beige dial-up phone with a curly cord. I had a moment of heightened awareness and love of my father, remembering that I used to sit next to him and listen to him talk on the phone, even though I didn't understand Polish. 3 bedrooms spanned out from the hall in my vision as I saw myself wearing a long ruffled nightgown. My eyes blurred as I became younger, and my outfit changed into a pink dress I wore at the Shiva. Peeking into Alan's room, I saw my brothers sitting there, lethargic, wondering why they were so sad with a house full of people and yummy goodies. I wanted them to play with me. I wanted my daddy to play with me. So that is one of my memories that I got when I was doing breath work. That's why I recommend breath work for people, so you could start to connect the dots for yourself. But that was a Shiva, and that's when someone dies. People, you know, get together for 7 days afterwards in the Jewish religion, and that helps with the mourning process. And so, you know, I'm pretty descriptive in the way I talk about the rooms, and that was how I connected to interior design this time with my book. So I don't know, Patrick, if you had anything that you noticed or.
Yeah, I noticed the descriptive quality of it, the curled foam cord and the color and the rust couch and the door chimes with the long brass chimes on them, like very vivid. Mm-hmm. Like you almost took me there. Very good storyteller of what the materials and textures and feelings were.
Thank you.
Yeah, very clear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of getting back to what I was saying about leading somebody through the story of design or a memory or helping them along the way to get to their final destination of their project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is definitely a spiritual quality to all of it, isn't there?
Definitely. And memories and how you evoke it or how you make someone feel in that situation.
It feels to me like you are a healer, you know? I mean, I know that you do, you know, I don't think we touched on it so much, but you actually are a volunteer. You heal people voluntarily, right? Like you just go to hospitals, right?
Yeah, so Brigham and Women's Hospital here in Boston, they're, I think, I want to say still the only hospital in the U.S. I could be wrong. Hopefully I am wrong, where they actually let, through protocols, but they let Reiki volunteers come to the hospital and I treat oncology patients. I would say treat. I do a Reiki practice on them, and it's very rewarding as a cancer survivor myself, and my mother also. Just seeing people in that time of grief and questioning and a lot of sharp objects coming at them and needles and directives, and it's nice, like, respite in their day to have somebody come and, you know, treat them with love and compassion, and oftentimes they fall asleep or finally break down and release a lot of energy through tears or even death. I've been with some of them when they've passed away.
Oh, wow. So, and that must be hard. Was that hard for you?
You know what? I have to say, like, the reason I started doing it is I was afraid of death and dying. And I think when you get in that situation, and again, growing up in a medical family, that's all we talked around the dinner table about. Used to make my uncle so mad. but it's, you know, once you, I decided to take my fear head on and see what happens in the hospital. And, you know, if you're not doing well and you're kind of at the end of your life, and it got less and less hard for me to the point that I'm now, you know, I'm comfortable around it.
Because you're helping them transition. You're helping them go to where they're supposed to go. It's beautiful.
Exactly.
I love that.
And it was some more just the, for me, it wasn't the fear of dying or like going to wherever I'm going to go. It was more, you know, bodily functions and medicines and suffering. I think that's the hardest thing for me to see. It's kind of why I did become a vet, like, lover, happy to hug you, take care of you, but it was very hard for me to see the other stuff.
Right. Well, thank you so much. We'll be right back with Patrick Planeta, principal of Planeta Design Group, after this short break.
More exhilarating talk, healthylife.net.
I want to thank Patrick Planeta of Planeta Design Group for being such an inspiring guest today. I'm so thrilled that you're here, that you were here on the show. Patrick works in the Boston area and all over the world, and you can talk to him and reach out to him at his website, www.planetadesigngroup.com. Thank you so much, Patrick. It's really been a pleasure getting to know you.
It's awesome, and I'm glad we ran into each other in Boston and got to see your practice, too, and I hope you come back soon.
I will.
Great.
Thank you. So I'll talk to you all next month when I will be bringing you another truly wonderful, inspiring, exuberant guest. If you want to reach out to me personally for a shamanic awakening that'll move you forward, a house blessing, clearing, or a breathwork session, please go to my website at www.randymcgee.com. Wishing you all love, light, and laughter. See you later.